9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Conditions grow desperate inside Gaza's stricken Al-Shifa Hospital while Israeli forces fight Hamas in the area. Plus, South Carolina Senator Tim Scott withdraws from the GOP presidential race. And after the S&P 500's best two-week stretch of the year, investors hope for more.
Many traders are positioning for a year-end rally in the stock market. They don't want to be caught off guard if the stock market keeps rising.
It's Monday, November 13th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. We begin in Gaza, where Al-Shifa Hospital, the largest in the enclave, has become the subject of global focus. Thousands of displaced people are stuck inside amid intense fighting in the area while medical supplies, food, and water run out. Israel alleges Hamas operates a command center at the hospital, a claim Hamas denies, and that the militant group prevented hospital staff from retrieving fuel deliveries to end a power outage. Staff said it was too unsafe to retrieve them. Hamas on Sunday suspended talks to secure the release of hostages held by the group and militants in Gaza over fighting at the hospital, with Hamas telling mediators Qatar and Egypt that Israel had shown a lack of interest in a deal. Before the suspension, officials were discussing the release of up to 100 women and children held captive in Gaza in exchange for the release of Palestinian women and children in Israeli prisons, fuel for hospitals, and regular humanitarian pauses to the fighting. Meanwhile, U.S. and Israeli differences over a post-war solution for Gaza are continuing to play out in public view. Washington is pushing for the West Bank-based Palestinian Authority to be involved in governance and security control in Gaza. And meeting over the weekend in Saudi Arabia, Arab and Muslim leaders endorsed a similar proposal, calling on all Palestinian factions to unite under the PLO, which oversees the Palestinian Authority. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu rejected those suggestions. Here he was on NBC's Meet the Press.
Overall military responsibility will have to be in Israel. As far as the civilian management of Gaza, we need to see the following two things. Gaza has to be demilitarized and Gaza has to be de-radicalized. Mm-hmm. And I think so far we haven't seen any Palestinian force, including the Palestinian Authority, that is able to do it.
The field of Republican candidates vying to represent their party in next year's U.S. presidential election is shrinking. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, the sole remaining black candidate in the GOP race, withdrew on Sunday, telling Fox News that he was unable to catch momentum in a field dominated by former President Donald Trump. Scott's departure follows that of former Vice President Mike Pence and comes as some anti-Trump donors have been urging marginal candidates to drop out of the race and back a sole alternative to Trump. In a surprise UK government shakeup, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has tapped his predecessor David Cameron as Foreign Secretary and sacked Home Secretary Suella Braverman, who had long courted the right wing of the Conservative Party. The moves are seen as an attempt to tilt the party toward the political center ahead of elections next year, in which Conservatives are pulling behind the opposition Labour Party. And investors are optimistic about a year-end market rally. With the S&P 500 coming off its best two-week stretch of the year, rising 7.2%, many are abandoning bearish wagers, with the CBOE Volatility Index, known as Wall Street's fear gauge, dropping from October highs. Reporter Gunjan Banerjee has more.
So what we've seen lately is that many investors have stepped into the market to buy the dip during the recent volatility. Sentiment has taken a big turn lately. We've seen leverage funds like hedge funds reduce their exposure to bearish positions in the market or turn to trades that would profit if stocks kept rising over the next few weeks. There are some risks to watch out for. The S&P 500 recently concluded its best winning streak since 2021. But Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said that it was too early to declare victory on inflation. Another thing that's been driving volatility in stocks lately is the bond market. Bond yields have jumped over the past few months, and any tumult in bonds seems to quickly spill over into stocks. That means stock market investors should keep a close eye on the bond market.
All right, how is this for a story of striking gold or potentially something even more valuable? A former Wall Street banker buys a coal mine in Wyoming, sight unseen, for $2 million. And then one day, some scientists show up and ask if they can run some tests on the place. Well, fast forward, and the results of those tests find that this sleepy coal mine might contain the largest so-called unconventional rare earth deposit in the U.S., which, depending on commodity prices and what it would cost to get those minerals out of the ground, mean the mine could be worth a whopping $37 billion. It's a story as intriguing as it is potentially transformative for U.S. national security. And Journal Global Metals and Mining reporter Julie Steinberg is here to unspool it for us. Julie, take us to this mine in Wyoming. What exactly has been found there?
So scientists found concentrations of these rare earth elements, which is basically a catch-all term for these elements used in permanent magnets for the motors in electric vehicles, offshore wind turbines, and in military applications like missile defense. Essentially, there's untold applications right now for these sorts of elements, and so that's why they're considered very valuable to the green energy transition.
And further adding to the interest factor around all of this, Julie, is that some other minerals found at this mine are ones that were recently subject to Chinese export controls.
Exactly. So gallium and germanium, they're not rare earths, but they're metals used in semiconductors, missile systems, and solar cells. And they were also found in the samples tested at this site in Wyoming. And China recently limited exports of those two minerals, which is really ratcheting up interest in those minerals, especially on U.S. soil.
All right, this all sounds like quite a find. Can we put some numbers on it? What kind of resource security could this mine potentially provide to the United States?
So according to the company and its third-party consultant estimates, there are as much as 1.1 million metric tons of rare earth oxides at just over a quarter of the mine site. And for reference, the U.S. consumes around 8,300 metric tons of those oxides each year.
I'm just doing some fast math here. That's more than 130 years. Worth of U.S. annual consumption, though I just can't imagine it's that simple.
Unfortunately not. The timeline is tough to forecast because the company has to figure out the best way to mine, extract, separate, and process the rare earths, as well as how much it's all going to cost. They do have a permit for that spot of land, which helps because permitting process in the U.S. is notoriously difficult and long. In their case, it took 8 years to get one.
All right, so there's one permit in hand, but I have to ask about refining. This is perennially an issue when it comes to deposits of rare earths. You know, can you get permission to refine them, especially given the resulting environmental concerns that can come along with that? And even then, can you do all of this economically?
Right. That's a key consideration because most rare earth refining right now is done in China, and U.S. companies and the federal government want to do more of it in the U.S. The company and government researchers say it may be an easier process to do for this mine because the elements are found within the coal and nearby clay and not in hard rock. So they say it could be cheaper and potentially more environmentally friendly, but that process could also run into the hundreds of millions of dollars to do. But these are some of the key things that the company, the government, as well as local communities are thinking about right now.
This all sounds like great news for the owner of this mine. But beyond that, is this a story that should be raising interest around the United States, potentially around the world, that if this one mine can unexpectedly contain the thing that everyone is looking for, maybe there are more of these minerals out there just waiting to be discovered?
That's definitely what the government is hoping for. So the government was very involved in this process and has been working with the company over the past few years to test these samples, right? And they're hopeful that this company's experience can be a model for other companies potentially sitting on critical mineral deposits. Countries around the world are also scrambling to shore up supplies and also diversify away from China. Sweden earlier this year announced a large deposit of rare earth elements, a new discovery, and that is offering fresh hopes for Europe's transition away from fossil fuels and also a lessened reliance on China. So there's definitely countries around the world that are focused on this as much as the U.S.
That was Wall Street Journal Global Metals and Mining reporter Julie Steinberg. Julie, thank you so much for bringing us this story.
Thanks, Luke.
Coming up, Google cracks down on AI ads that prey on small businesses. And Disney's new Marvel film lands with a thud at the box office. We've got those stories and more after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Google is cracking down on scammers who want to exploit growing interest in AI. In a lawsuit filed today, the tech giant alleges that unnamed individuals in India and Vietnam tricked small business owners into clicking on Facebook ads to download Google's Bard AI chatbot, which then installed malware on their computers. The ads are fake, as Bard is web-based and not available through download. According to Google's general counsel, the suit is thought to be the first of its kind to protect users of a major tech company's flagship AI product. And staying with cyber risks, several of Australia's largest ports are resuming operations today after being hit by cyber attacks on Friday that disrupted container traffic. The four terminals operated by Dubai-based DP World handle almost 40% of the goods coming in and out of Australia, with the company saying more disruptions are possible as it investigates the hack. And while the incident highlights Australia's specific cyber vulnerabilities, especially amid deepening military ties with the U.S., Journal reporter Patricia Kausman told us it speaks to the growing threat of cyber attacks around the world.
Yeah, there's no doubt that cybersecurity is on top of a lot of authorities' agendas around the world. I cover banks in Europe, for example, and this has been a constant talk. In the case of Australia, this is a country with a lot of resources, so that means they're heavily dependent on the ports. It's a weak link for Australia, but the attacks obviously can happen in our industries. And according to a colleague in Sydney, the government has actually been consulting with companies and industry bodies to create a broader cybersecurity strategy.
All right, so that is one approach, Patricia. Another, which we are seeing take shape in New York today, is just to mandate that, in this case, hospitals enact more protections. This is a Wall Street Journal exclusive story. Tell us what's happening here.
Yeah, so the state had already come up with this cybersecurity strategy months ago that was broad, but basically said that they would then tackle each sector individually. And they are doing this today on cybersecurity regulations for hospitals. And that is because hospitals are extremely popular targets when it comes to cyber attacks. They tend to actually pay out or do whatever the cyber criminals are asking quicker in order to protect the patients and the data. So what the government's requiring is that hospitals need to develop and test a response plan in case of an attack and install the security technologies. Simple things like, in order for people in the hospital to log into the system, they need to go through multi-factor authentications. Many companies individually have been tackling this issue over the years, but regulators and governments have decided that they need to take this further and step up the effort. And we're going to see a lot more of those kind of rules coming up around the world.
That was the Journal's Patricia Kausman. And finally, Disney's latest superhero film, The Marvels, had a lackluster $47 million opening weekend in North America, the weakest of any movie in the Marvel franchise. The underwhelming result highlights a concern that CEO Bob Iger expressed during the company's earnings last week, that Disney is making too much content and not focusing enough on quality. Iger says he intends to personally intervene and shift focus to producing higher quality films that also resonate well on Disney's streaming platform. And that is What's News for Monday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali and Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer was Christina Rocha, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.